Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, everybody. This is Lynn, and my co-host is Andy Mayer. Hey, Andy, how are you doing today? Uh-oh, I think we lost Andy. Or either that, I can't hear a thing on my phone. Today, we're doing the show. Well, I'm actually at my house. I don't know where Andy is. Unfortunately, I couldn't get on Skype. So hopefully
I
can hear me. Oh, there you are. You put yourself on mute or something?
I guess I did. I'm actually at home myself, but we're not at home together.
Oh, no, we're not at home together. We're in our separate homes. So today I'm using my phone. So if I ever cut out, at least hopefully I'll still be on air. It's just that my internet at home has been kind of not really friendly.
I'm not going to shamelessly plug anything, but I'm with CenturyLink, and I'm having great reception, rather great transmission, so go figure.
No, I'm with CenturyLink, but they don't have a good whatever it is that they have here in Fairwood. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's
well,
not a good
really
thing enough. Well, yeah, it's DSL, sorry.
What you going to do?
I don't know. I didn't exactly want to go to the office and do this because, you know, after the show, I just want to go to sleep afterwards.
Right?
We've been pulling late nights, so I wanted to just be home. But this is the trade-off. So, oh, well. But if anybody is out there, just let me know if I am not being heard or whatever, especially those of you who are streaming online, and for those of you who would like to speak to us today, our call-in number is 347-677-0699. Let me repeat that again because I just messed up. 347-677-0699. And today's episode is basically talking about therapy touch for the terminally ill or the medically fragile, and we'll probably get into a little bit of that and what might constitute as terminally ill and medically fragile. But before we get to that, hey Andy, what have you been doing the last 2 weeks? Any good news?
Well, I'm going to be DJing an event this weekend. It's going to be called Crypticon. I am doing Prom of the Dead. It's going to be sort of a goth industrial type of gathering prom, I guess. You can check it out on Facebook, and you can also do a little bit you can do a Google search on Crypticon and see what they're all about. Crypticon has been in operation now for about, I believe, a couple of years now, and they're one of the, if you're really into the horror genre, you definitely have to check them out because they're having some great guests in attendance. Let me see if I can actually pull them up. As Flash crashes on my computer. Let's take a look at the 2013 guests.
I was just talking to Doug about that earlier.
Yeah, so if anybody of you remember who Elvira is, the actress is going to be there, Cassandra Elvira Peterson. She's going to be there. Josh Stewart, Derek Mayers. But I think the big one that is, in my opinion, that's going to draw a bunch of crowds is Nicholas Brendon of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the television series, is going to be there. So this is going to be a great event. We also have Fred the Hammer Williamson. He was with From Dusk Till Dawn. He was in Black Caesar. Hell Up in Harlem, Josh Hawkins. We've got Tom was canceled. Oh, okay, we're not going to cancel that. I was really looking forward to see Tom, too, because he was in Dawn of the Dead and Friday the 13th and Dusk Till Dawn. That would have been awesome to see Tom.
So what kind of music will you be DJing, though, over there, Andy? Is it, like, some techno music, dance music, what?
Well, I'm going to be doing a lot of what's called goth industrial and electronic body music. So it's sort of a lot more of a darker wave, more aggressive music. People are going to be dressed up as zombies. They're going to be dressed up in leather and black, vinyl. It's basically Prom of the Dead. So, I mean, zombies and prom, you know, what could be better? So my sets can be primarily Rob Zombie, KMFDM. I think I've got a little bit of APOC to Mud Berserk. I've got some V&V Nation, Combi Christ. So it's going to be good times. I if you can still get tickets, let me see how much admission is. Let's see here. It's going to be 85.
Free. Just kidding.
Huh? Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, right?
I was just kidding.
It's going to be $85 at the door for the entire weekend if you're an adult. $55 at the door for the kids for the entire weekend. Friday is going to be $30 for adults, $30 for Saturday, and $30 for Sunday. So it's going to be a fun event.
The website so they can just check it out?
Do a Google search under crypticonseattle.com.
Okay. So which day are you going to be DJing, though?
Pardon?
Which day would you
I'm
going to
be DJing on Saturday night.
On Saturday night. Okay, so basically, say hi to the DJ, folks, if you're going to go to Crypticon.
Most definitely. I won't be the only event there. There's also going to be the guys from Biohazard. I'm not going to be the only DJ. We're going to have two other DJs, too. It's going to be DJ Major Tom and another guy as well. And if I can find the event, I'll give him a shout out real quick.
Sounds good. Rusty's going to actually be calling hopefully sometime later on, and I'm kind of hoping that there are some other individuals out there who will call who are practitioners, because we do have a caller, and I talked to her before we aired, that has some questions. She's looking for alternative ways to actually deal with her symptoms and conditions. So, I'm kind of hoping we'll have more callers calling in, because I only have my versions or what I'm experienced in, and my practice is not necessarily geared towards the terminally ill or the medically fragile, though I have worked with them. So... how about Andy? I know you're a musician. Have you met or anyone concerning, I don't know if you've done music therapy with anybody?
I kind of have an interesting story, actually, about the entire, I don't know, I don't want to say that I've played for the dead, quote unquote, but I grew up Catholic. And my mother was a member of the Legion of Mary, and one of the outreach services that we used to do, or that she used to do, was she used to minister to Catholic people who were elderly or on their deathbed. And, it'd be a Bible study, it would be or saying prayer, or just, keeping them company so, they had comfort. Well, at the time, I was, I want to say I was in grade school. So my mom would bring me to all these different places. And I really didn't want to enter the room and such. So all I did was kind of plant myself in the lobby and play piano. And I think that kind of brought a lot of solace. I mean, nobody ever came up to me and told me, oh, you need to stop playing piano and stuff. But I actually, come to think about it, I actually had some people come up to me and say thank you a couple of times. And then when my... when my grandparents were, getting up there and they were staying at a Catholic nursing home, a lot of the times I would play piano in the cafeteria or there was a lounge and grandma and grandpa would come visit. And a lot of people would come up to me and they'd say thank you again. So, I mean, that's sort of my experience. And it was always strange to do music in those areas because it was, you know, I mean, I knew I was kind of bringing, you know, some sort of comfort to them because, you know, if they don't have a lot of entertainment there, okay, they kind of do their thing.
Yeah.
And so when somebody would come in and just, you know, play on piano, it was sort of a godsend, quote unquote, for the residents of this nursing facility, this nursing home. So I don't know, have I actually kind of played piano to somebody dying? No, but I have seen the comforting factor of music for people who are sort of on their way. My one of my martial arts instructors recently passed away, and we had a good friend who played Native American flute, which when, you know, he was on his final days was a huge comfort for him. It really calmed him down. It gave him the comfort and strength to face, you know, whatever's on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I'm a firm believer that, you know, if you kind of know you're, you know, you're kind of on your way, I think it's very important to cultivate, you know, these connections with people who can, you know, make those final days as comfortable as possible. You know, not to get into a discussion on, you know, what happens in the afterlife, if there is one, but, I mean, it is definitely a transition. So, you know, try and, in my opinion, try to make it as comfortable and as happy as possible.
Okay. Well, before we go on with this, I wanted to basically give some aspect of what I am kind of meaning for the terminally ill and also the medically fragile. When I say terminally ill, it's basically folks who have an illness that can result in their death eventually, like cancer. But there's now a lot of folks who are actually in remission and so on and so forth. And then there's the ALS, which is most commonly referred to as Lou Gehrig's disease. ALS is, oh gosh, I think if I can say this correctly, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Ah, I butchered that one. And basically, it's just a progressive neurodegenerative disease that affects the nerve cells in the brain and the spinal cord, in which the motor neurons that reach from the brain to the spinal cord and from the spinal cord to the muscles throughout the body is no longer giving enough information to the muscle to actually initiate muscle movement. So they lose muscle movement, and basically, I mean, they can still feel. They can feel heat, touch, but they can't move and react. I mean, if they have an itch, they can't really scratch it because they can't move. And they slowly lose the movement to a point that even some smooth muscles, the peristalsis, like the common, you know, your stomach muscle, I guess, in the digestion and all that stuff will start to seize. And that's the reason why a lot of people, when diagnosed with this, usually they basically don't last more than a year. And the reason for it is the reason why we want to talk about touch for the terminally ill, which I will get into later on. The other one is basically folks who have gone through trauma. And these are traumas such as life-altering illnesses, body-altering injuries, a loss of a limb, so on and so forth, psychological trauma, and also life-threatening trauma, in which there are some people who survive and, like, say, a group of people, all but one or a few lived, and they sometimes will have a what they call a survivor's guilt. And then basically it just goes downhill from there, psychological as well. And we're also talking about the elderly, the medically fragile. Those are in their last years of their life. And also the chronically ill, in which they have no idea what's going on with their body, and yet they are in constant pain, so on and so forth. I know somebody who's going through this. And this is one reason why I wanted to talk about it, because I am seeing this in my practice, and I wanted to also find out what other ways to deal with it as a practitioner, because I feel for these folks, and most caregivers are empathic in some respect. And so, yeah, the benefit that I've seen, this is the reason why people look for massage. I have to just talk about what I do, which is massage therapy, is that the benefit of therapeutic massage for the terminally ill and the medically fragile are basically it gets them out of a negative symptom, which is anger. Another one is anxiety. They know this is happening to them. They can't stop it, and they're afraid. There's also depression, the feelings of isolation, insomnia, because they think about the pain or their disease or their situation, symptoms, and they just can't go to sleep because they're trying to rack their brain. What did they do to get there, or how can they get out of it? Musculoskeletal pain, stiffness and spasms, just to name a few. And most of the people that have actually massaged are very thankful for the just the touch itself, that I'm actually acknowledging their pain and I'm with them. They're not going against anybody or telling somebody this is how they feel and somebody saying, no, it's all in your head. Basically treating them like a human being and empathizing and just being with them sometimes is enough. Holding their hand sometimes is enough. So I as a practitioner, I want to know what is out there for me to also use. And let me bring in Robin. Let's see here if my computer can get her on there. Oh, boy. Hey, Robin, can you hear me? Can you talk?
I'm still here. I'm listening, kind of.
Hi, Robin. Welcome to the show.
I'm in and out, on and off. I'm just like that.
Oh, that's okay. It's just that my computer is saying it's still trying to get you on the system. It's thinking, but yet you are with us as far as talking on the phone. So, hey, we can hear each other. Awesome.
Well, it knew me. Your computer understands me.
No, actually, it's not the computer. I'm having bad, slow computer thing going because of the internet. But, hey, I'm glad that you are on, and thank you very much for calling. What made you call today's talk?
The terminally ill thing. I want you to hear this because it's been a really big deal in my life. I went to a neurologist because I started having severely bad seizures when I went to sleep at night when I was about 26 years old. A doctor told me, he looked me in the eye and he said, I found a hole in your brain. And that's where the seizures are coming from. And you are going to die from this if we don't stop it. And, you know, the seizures themselves have been a big, big deal to me in my life. They've changed my, you know, perspective on life itself. And, you know, I've done nothing but try to seek a way of trying to stop these seizures because they hurt so bad, too. I hear the pain. You know, I've been on a Valium drip when I've had to go to the hospital because of the seizures. They give me all kinds of pain medicine that I really don't like to take because it makes my mind not right, like when I have seizures. And I want to find alternative forms of therapy. I really think that the chamomile helps. I really, really think that the massage therapy helps. And the meditation and the stretching and just getting rid of the stress, not stressing out about things so bad. And, you know, this is, it's changed my life drastically, and it's hard not to cry about it when I think about my children. I have two children. And you know, it's really hard to deal with when a doctor looks at you and says, you know, this, you're going to die from this.
Wow, that's how they basically told you that? I mean, they basically just set you down and said,
I've gone to several different neurologists, and I've had more than one tell me that I'm going to die from the kind of seizures that I'm having. It looks like somebody beat the hell out of me when I've had seizures. Because I feel it, my face so bad, and I'm in a lot of pain. My whole body hurts. It's debilitating pain. And, you know, the pain doesn't go away overnight because it's so debilitating. It lasts for weeks sometimes. It depends on how bad the seizures were. Sometimes I have more than one. And if I've had more than one seizure, sometimes the pain can last for up to 2 weeks. And it's just like I've had the biggest workout in my life. You know, every muscle in my body just aches and tears. And, you know, but I don't like the medication. Why don't I like the medication? Because of the side effects. I've had to experience a lot of the side effects, too, and that's been very debilitating. What I consider, you know, my epilepsy has been a very, very terminally harsh thing to deal with.
Just out of curiosity, how's your family actually dealing with the seizures when you have them?
It's been hard. I went through a divorce recently within the last 3 years. I've been separated for 5 years now, I think. Four before. I have a terrible memory now, too. I'll tell you that. It's like being in someone's life. You don't even know. And, you know, sometimes I don't even know what year it is. I'm 33 years old, and I'm getting Alzheimer's, Lynn.
Huh. So is it because of your situation that you had a divorce or?
No, you know what? I really wanted that because my marriage was so hard on me that I've moved from Idaho to New Mexico. And I knew that my husband wouldn't stay there because I just know him. And he did. He left back to Idaho, and I got the divorce papers, and he signed them. And, you know, I wanted that to happen. I came to New Mexico for a lot of reasons. New Mexico has been the land of contentment for me.
Okay.
But, you know, I knew I had to end that because a lot of it is just the anger and the resentment and, like, any kind of negativity. Really gets, anything that gets me down, I know triggers those seizures and the pain that comes after.
Yeah, that's the thing. All those negative stuff is actually not necessarily helpful because it produces the wrong sets of hormones and the adrenaline goes up. You have this fight or flight responses in which over time it just it's not good for your body basically. And this is where
like when your body's defenses are trying to, you know, fight an infection.
Yeah. This is why as a massage therapist, it definitely is something that I have to be aware of when I'm with folks who are in that mindset, the depressed anger. I have to always remind myself they're not angry with me. You know,
the toughest hassle, I promise, right?
You know, I mean, I have to do that all the time. And sometimes, this is the reason why if it's a client, I can keep my distance, you know, emotionally. But when they become friends and they're going through a rough time and then they yell at you, sometimes I'm not quite sure that they're yelling at me as a friend or they're yelling at me as a therapist. Oh, boy.
I mean, they just need to get it out. I have
thing,
to remind myself.
Another thing that I would like to actually talk about, but I need to find folks to talk about this. One thing that in another show that I had was to talk about positive things that actually can help people with anxiety or depression. And one, I'm not quite sure if you looked into it, you could look into like a meetup group. It's called a laughing yoga or laughing groups, because laughter actually is great for you. It produces endorphins.
I've never heard of a laughing group. Never, never.
Oh, you might look into that and you'll make great friends. The thing that you need to look for right now for alternative, as far as, I mean, I'm not telling you to not take your medications or anything to that effect, but maybe on top of that.
Lynn, I already did. I wish, you know, I live in New Mexico, and I wish I could get on the medical marijuana program. I've been diagnosed with epilepsy. It's just difficult when I'm having seizures to even know how to file papers and do anything like that. You know, I'm debilitated. I'm on disability for a reason.
Too bad you're not in Washington. They just legalized it here.
I know, for recreational use.
Well, congratulations. I am so happy. You know, we have to go through this huge process and pay a lot of money here in New Mexico to, you know, even think about it.
Yeah, but the only the trade-off if you do move to Washington is the weather. It might get you down.
Yes, I spent 2 weeks in Port Orchard when I was there in my early 20s. Yes, and I was praying for a ray of sunshine. But it was an experience, and I treasure it. I really do. It was absolutely beautiful there, and I got to ride a four-wheeler through the rainforest, and you know, Port Orchard's amazing. We stayed in the log cabin.
Going back to the medical marijuana, you said it just takes paperwork to fill out, lots of it, or what in New Mexico?
Well, you have to pay a big fee too. You have to pay big fees too, and you got to find a doctor that's willing to sign the paper that says you need it.
Oh, whoa, okay.
You can't decide for yourself that you need it. You have to find somebody that's going to say you need it. And, you know, the last neurologist that was here in Clovis, he disappeared. And I looked him up on the Internet today. I think he's in Pennsylvania. And I called Clovis and Albuquerque, and they both told me, oh, the last place I thought he was Albuquerque. And Albuquerque told me, oh, the last place we thought he was Clovis. He just disappeared.
Wow.
There's no neurologist here. There's absolutely no neurologist here.
Because I know of a lot of people that swears by the healing properties of marijuana.
Well, I think that it's the only reason that I've ever, you know, I eat sometimes. I don't eat for a long time when I've had seizures. And, you know, if that gets me in trouble, you know, I don't know what to say, because I'd probably die without it sometimes.
Are your kids small kids right now, or are they getting older?
Well, you know, they don't really worry about it too much with all their other problems here. But, you know, I'd really rather have it be legit. I just wish they'd just legalize it everywhere, and it could be a new industry, because it could really save America's ass right now.
I mean, you know, I was thinking about this, and the running benefit, and I kind of say this kind of half jokingly, but honestly, if marijuana was legalized on the federal level, I mean, could you imagine just how much of an economic stimulus that would be from Frito-Lay, Pepsi products, and Taco Bell?
Well, what if somebody just wants to make shirts, you know? They don't want to get somebody high. How long have cowboys been making ropes out of hemp?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that's bad for us, they're selling
and
making profit out of it.
You know, what about equal rights? What about equal rights, you know?
I know, right?
So
I have no idea. I think the reason why they're against, this is my opinion, they're against marijuana is because it's natural, it grows naturally, they can't make a profit out of it.
Well,
yeah,
go ahead.
And, well, they're saying a lot about, you know, already, you know, engineered seeds. You know, they already don't want farmers doing that, and there's already kind of a little war starting there.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, how far is that going to go, too? I mean, there's always a different, you know, perspective on everything. But
you're
I think
thinking that, Andy?
Personally, that it has created way more good than bad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of these pills that have been shoved down my throat, I think, are the reason why I have a lot of the problems that I do. And personally, I just think that alternative, natural forms of therapy, like massage and, you know, marijuana is natural. It comes from the earth. I think those are, and it's not toxic. You know, you got to look at the toxins, and that's why I came up with that, you know, idea about that. You know, I agree with myself. It's not as toxic as, you know, everybody driving around a gas-powered vehicle every day. Somebody's going to cry about inhaling smoke. Well, what about you slamming down the gas pedal on, you know, your, you know, 450 engine? You know, who wants to suck out of a tailpipe? There's always a different perspective, right?
Well,
but
yeah, people are actually...
It's not going to create side effects because it's not toxic.
Yeah. And sometimes the pills that you take for your condition has even worse side effects. I mean, I find this very amusing when I'm listening to commercials and they give you the side effects and, you know, blah, blah, blah for your nose, you know, like Flonase or whatever it was. And then they said, may cause bleeding in the nose or maybe death. And I'm like, just for, oh, gosh, really? Death too?
Well, we're just supposed to ignore all the bad parts of all printings, right?
Jeez.
Yeah. We're just supposed to pretend that it's not theirs. You know, just skim over the asterisk. It's all good.
Yeah, well, that's why they talk really fast.
There's all these side effects.
I got a physician desk reference for myself for the first time because I really wanted to know what all these pills were doing to me. I have a physician's desk reference, and, you know, because I was out of my mind, I knew who my kids were, but I didn't recognize them. I knew they were my kids, but when I was on the desk, when I was on a certain pill, I don't think I can say it, but I was on a certain medication for my seizures, and it was terrifying.
Robin, does your book actually also state what medicine counteracts or reacts with another medicine if you're taking multiple different kinds of medication?
I'm sure it does. It does.
Okay.
Let me see.
Because really,
your
doctor's supposed to say this to you or tell you.
Yes. It has headings for all those. Possible food and drug interactions.
Okay.
Yeah. So it tells, this book has been really good to me. Yeah, it tells you, you know, what food and drug interactions can occur when taking this medication on all of them. I need to get an updated one though. I need to get a 2014. Aren't they already printing them?
I don't know. It's still not quite June or middle of this year, so I'm not quite sure if they are. Maybe they're getting ready to print.
Yeah.
But,
always
I
good
seen
to update your sources.
I seen 2014 on it today, and I was like, really? But, you know, the debilitating thing is a lot is the medications has been for me. So I'm really, really, really interested in alternative forms of any kind of relief I can get, because I'm when I'm in pain, I'm in so much pain, I can't do the things that I love and enjoy to do. I can't live my life. I don't feel alive when I'm in a lot of pain.
What other therapies have you done other than massage and meditation?
Well, I stretch a lot. And you know what? The truth is I don't get a lot of massage. You know, there's not a lot of doctors around here. And it's hard for me to get treatment. I got to travel to Albuquerque for me to get some really good treatment. So maybe I'll look this up, you know, go start getting started on some massage therapy, because, you know, I heard about your show here on Facebook, and I had to talk to you about it because you said terminally ill, and I've been really dealing with that a lot. You know, it's changed my life, Lynn. It has really changed my life.
Well, my experiences as a massage therapist with dealing with folks with chronic illness and so on and so forth actually kind of started out as soon as I got out of school. The very first event that we've done was actually dealing with folks who are raising money for they're not ill, but they're raising money for kids who have been abused or neglected. And so there's some emotional stuff going on with some of these folks. And so we had to be very open and understanding to some of their requests. There are some women who do not want to be touched by a man. So we had to make sure that we have enough women massage therapists on the group.
Yes.
And so on and so forth. And then another event came up, which is the MS Society. We started doing some massages in Oregon for the MS, and that's when I kind of noticed that there's certain therapists that didn't know how to deal with someone in a wheelchair, how to help them on and off the table. And he looks so awkward that we were afraid that he might drop that person.
Yes, that's understandable when somebody is extremely fragile. You're afraid you'll bruise
mm-hmm.
them, you know, just grasping them.
Well, not only that, there's some of us who were watching this guy, this therapist, in doing neck work, you know, the neck, and he was going a little too fast for our taste. And so that's when I started making sure that the massage therapist I actually take on an event knows exactly what event we're doing, what type of symptoms that we're looking for, and how we're going to basically treat them with some kind of a dignity, you know? We can't just go, oh, I don't want to touch you because you might have something I might get. That's not how you treat them.
When I got out of college, when I was in my early 20s, I actually did a little bit of home care. And me and another girl, we would actually go to people's houses that were elderly and fragile, and we would bathe them, and we would take care of them and change the sheets on their beds and make
mm-hmm.
sure they had food in their fridges. You know, we took care of them. And so I've had experience with this kind of thing. And I understand, you know, and that's got to be something that's accessible to the elderly and something that people are more comfortable with, maybe more educated. Maybe we're not getting enough education about it or experience that it's going to happen, you know, and people don't
yeah.
want to be in nursing homes. I thought that home care was a really good alternative to a nursing home. People don't want to die in a nursing home.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
I kind of have to agree with that. I mean, I understand that there are some more or less nursing homes that are beginning to reverse that vibe of, you know, this is a place where you go to die and stuff. But honestly, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, quality of life. You know, when you're facing, you know, the statistically, you know, what is statistically, you know, quote unquote, the end times. You know,
people have to really absorb that, though, you know, no matter how many times you tell them that, you know, like, I appreciate life now so much because I've experienced being close to death, and I've been told that I'm going to die from what I'm experiencing. And so I appreciate life so much that, you know, I didn't before, but it's really hard to get other people to really absorb that. You know, you can tell them
yeah.
that a thousand times, but how do you get people to really appreciate something that they should, you know?
Yeah, no, I actually kind of know where you're coming from. When I was 25, I was diagnosed with cardiomyopathy. Basically, one of my valves was swollen, and I was sort of in a really weird emotional place because, I mean, I kind of drove my body hard. I mean, I was into alcohol. I was into high-sugar foods. You know, I stayed up late. I partied a lot. You know, and eventually my body, I got sick, and my body couldn't fight this virus, so it decided to take residence in one of my valves. Well, one night I'm trying to walk up a hill, and I can't. You know, it felt like I was running like a marathon. So I figured, oh no, you know, all this smoking and all this drinking has finally caught up to me. I thought I had asthma. I went down to the emergency room because I couldn't breathe. I was like, no, Mr. Mayor, your lungs are flooded with fluid. Congestive heart failure. And I'm like going, I've gotten into what? I'm 25 years old. I shouldn't be hitting congestive heart failure.
Yeah,
and I kind of really drove home about, you know, I kind of needed to take care of myself. I mean, a big part of that was the fact that, you know, I sleep with a Darth Vader machine. I sleep with a CPAP machine. And the quality of life has actually improved. But during that entire ordeal, it kind of really drove home what I need to do with my life, and which is, you know, not pay attention, well, not to give, to accept that there are negative factors in my life, and then to always try to turn it around. And to always be grateful and thankful for life.
Oh, it's magical. Life is amazing.
Yes,
absolutely.
It is.
Now that we realize that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, we relate so much because, like I was telling Lynn earlier, you know, I experience these symptoms of what I can only say is like Alzheimer's. You know, I wake up, I don't know what year it is, I don't know where I am, I don't know who I am. You know, I slowly remember things over the next couple of days, you know, but it's like experiencing Alzheimer's. I'm way too young for that. And like you said, with the congestive heart failure, you're at 25, you know, yeah, that's way, way too young.
I relate to that.
It hurts, man.
I'm kind of thankful that it happened because it kind of put a lot of things in perspective for me about, you know, the importance of what I really want to do with my life, which is, honestly, I you know, religious and philosophical things aside.
So what have you done about it medically? Have you had some surgery done on your heart or?
First I have to put the standard legal disclaimer. I'm only speaking from personal experience. I'm not endorsing a line of therapy or anything like that. But basically what had happened was I got my sleep apnea treated. I stopped drinking. I stopped smoking. You know, and then...
Did you change your diet, didn't you?
Yeah, I did change my diet until I got diagnosed with diabetes, which was when I was 36.
Mm-hmm.
So, but no, from that point on, I quit smoking, I quit drinking. I've never done any heavy drugs.
You just overnight were just like, I'm done, and you didn't do it no more.
Well, I mean, I fell off the wagon a couple of times. I'm not going to lie. I'm not perfect. I think it was like 5 years later, I was like, you know, I'm doing pretty well, you know, I'm keeping on my meds, I think I'm going to have a Mountain Dew, and then I got completely plowed two nights straight, and my heart went into atrial fibrillation, and I had to be on blood thinners for 3 months before and then 3 months after. So what they did is I was on the blood thinners for 3 months, and then they shocked my heart back into rhythm, and then they...
Something. Scary.
Yeah. Then they put me on Bloodthirst for 3 months afterwards. And I'll tell you what, that 6 months, I can kind of relate to where you are with, you know, with the medications and the side effects, because I'm a martial artist. I love dancing. I love moving. So, I mean, I couldn't go in the mosh pit, because I love rock and roll music and I love heavy metal and I love getting that aggression out. I couldn't go in the mosh pit because of the medication. I was on Coumadin. And so, you know, I couldn't get knocked around because I wasn't breathing.
At all because of the lights.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because of the seizure trigger. But,
yeah.
I will tell you this much. I've been studying Tai Chi Chuan for some time now, and it has improved my quality of life. There have been times where I've been injured, and then going through the Tai Chi Chuan, it has helped me. But I'm not, you know, before, you know, you take up any type of physical regimen, obviously see your talk to your doctor first.
Yes, I've always been very interested in martial arts, and I am very, very, you know, when I'm feeling good, when I haven't had a seizure for a month, I'm a very healthy person. You know, I can run, I can sprint, I take my son on hikes, you know, I take him to play disc golf. I'm very active, and I've always loved to be. And you know, I've always been interested in martial arts, but I just haven't really gone and done it because I've always kind of seen it as a kind of for the boys thing. I don't know. I'm kind of shy. I'm a shy girl.
Yeah. The important thing to understand about there are two lines of thought when it comes to the martial arts is there's the internal work and then there's the external work. And for the external work, I mean, for a lot of the self-defense, you know, it's a lot, you know, quote unquote, it's for the boys. You know, those are things like your various kung fus, like your karate but for some of your internal martial arts, that's your Tai Chi Chuan, that's your Fa Kua, you know, these are the things that really align the muscles. They stretch out the muscle groups that
and
you
I
can't
feel that I need
to.
That. I do. I feel that I need that a lot.
It also sounds like you need to come up to Washington and get a massage.
Yeah. And also go check out my friend's dojo or school, because she teaches a lot of two different kinds of Tai Chi, is Chen style and Yang style. So yeah, you should move back up.
Yeah, seriously. But and that's
style.
The one thing I love about Washington State is just because there's such a diversity of knowledge here. And I like to say that here in King County, we like to help each other and stuff.
Well, that's
so.
What makes America so great, right? We're all different, and we can still get along.
Absolutely. So, I mean, sometimes there might be, you can find Tai Chi classes sometimes at YMCAs, community centers.
YMCA, that's familiar. There we go.
Yeah.
Or you can go to
I want to let you know that I'm going to look it up. And I really appreciate, you know, your wisdom that you've shared with me, because I needed to hear some of this stuff because I got some new ideas. I just want you to know I got some new ideas, and I'm gonna check it out. I really appreciate it.
Just remember,
make sure Robin.
Know.
Oh, sorry,
yes.
Robin. Make sure though that you also resonate with the teacher. There's some teachers that you will not resonate with. It might be a bad, you know, combination. So you need to find a teacher that actually can understand where you're coming from.
Somebody you can make a connection with.
Correct. And you might also look into the laughing yoga groups or laughing groups. Another thing for that is because of the fact that laughter gives you those good hormones, endorphins, and it does help release some of that tension and relaxes you. It's basically like a massage, but you don't have to pay for.
That's great. I'm going to look into that. Laughter groups.
Look it up.
It's definitely significant because it's new to me. So I'm going to really look into those laughter groups. And I got the Tai Chi Young Style and YMCA. Well, what was the other style besides the Young Style?
Well, there's Ken
Style.
Style. And it's a mixture of fast and slow movements as well. So, I mean, that's what resonated with me. Young Style didn't resonate with me as well. I like the push hands in the Chen Style way it can be used in self-defense.
Okay. How do I spell it?
Chen, C-H-E-N.
Okay, I got it.
Just
thank
letting
you
know. You
guys have been a delight to talk to. I am
thrilled.
For
calling, Robin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for calling.
I got to talk to you, Lynn. This is awesome because I've always been your friend on Facebook for a while now.
Well, this is great. So, no, we can even talk some more on Facebook.
You guys have a great night, and thank you for having me on your show.
No, thank you.
Keep laughing.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
So, that was great. We actually had a caller.
I know, right?
I was kind of hoping for Rusty to call in and maybe have her talk about some Reiki stuff, because I can't talk about Reiki because I don't do Reiki.
No, could you tell us a little bit of your experiences with Reiki? Like, have you ever had Reiki done on you?
Yes, I have. Okay, it really all depends on what else they're doing. Okay, the first time I had Reiki done on me, she was doing Reiki on my hand because, you know, as a massage therapist, sometimes my hands are hurt, and she was just basically touching and might as well just be holding my hand. And I just kind of like, okay, I'll just sit here. What am I supposed to be feeling? I don't feel anything. She's just holding my hand. It was nothing. I didn't feel like anything. There's no change, nothing. And then another person did Reiki on me. And what she did actually is put a singing bowl on my low back because I was having a little bit of a low back issue. This is just my first couple of years as a massage therapist, still trying to figure out body mechanics on my, you know, on my low table. And she basically rang and did the, it's a Tibetan bowl, it's a little one. She basically rang and I did pretty well. And then she also used tuning forks. And then one time I went for the second time, I went to her place. She didn't have a studio yet, but she had this huge gong, and she just basically rang it, and I just kind of felt kind of, whoa, airy, floating, I'm floating, yes, I feel good. And
go ahead.
It was just that it was just different. I think it was sound that I was having more of a connection and not the light touch, because the light touch actually aggravated me more because I felt like they're doing nothing. But the music, the gong, the sound actually calmed me.
Wow.
So I can say it really wasn't the Reiki. It was the sound therapy, the vibrations that got to me.
Interesting. Have you ever participated in a drum circle before?
Yes.
You know, it's kind of funny because there's a place out in Redmond. It's called Soul Food Books, and I think I've probably mentioned them before in past episodes. But on Sunday, they have a drum circle. And it's kind of interesting that you bring up sound as, you know, sound therapy and how it made you feel. I remember I was having a particularly just angry day. It was Sunday, and I was just like, I was just in a bad mood. It was like, today is just, I'm just angry. I need to do something. So I went out, and I found myself at this coffee shop, Soul Foods, and then there was a drum circle that went on. And I did participate. All I did was just sit down and write in my journal. And, you know, I remember the journal entry because I wasn't exactly, you know, writing about what I was angry about because I didn't really know why I was angry. I was just angry. And then the drums kind of just soothed me. And, you know, and it was a pretty aggressive beat. I mean, the tempo was mm-hmm. moderate, and, you know, it just kind of droned out. And I don't know, it was kind of weird. It was like almost I was getting like a mind massage because of all the different rhythms and stuff. And I found it to be very comforting.
Well, it also puts you in a trance, actually. And that's what the vibration did to me. It put me in a trance. My very first acupuncture treatment, the acupuncture itself didn't do anything much. It was my first time. I was really anxious about it, but I wanted to try it. And then she started doing some cranial sacral stuff, and then she had a crystal singing bowl that she played with and then did more sacral cranial stuff. And I felt like, again, I was floating off, like it was an out-of-body experience kind of thing. And, again, it was with the vibration stuff. It wasn't the other, well, kind of it was, but what made it felt better, the whole experience, was the singing bowl again.
Right. Was this with the same practitioner?
No, it was a different practitioner.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, that's the reason why if anybody wants to do Reiki on me, it's like, do you have tuning forks?
You
have like, it's not going to work.
I
already know that.
You know, yeah. Oh, it's kind of weird because, you know, when I do Tai Chi Chuan, and I'm studying with my other instructors and other students, we always have music moving on
mm-hmm.
and such. And that kind of puts us into that comfort zone. It kind of puts us in that zone and
mm-hmm.
such, which is really interesting because my form of Tai Chi Chuan is actually a combat form. The way that it was taught, there's actually an applicable self-defense aspect of it. So it was really interesting to, you know, there's this gentle music, and then you're picturing exactly what you're doing to this individual who's throwing a kick at you. You know, it's like, oh, I'm going to block here. I'm going to, you know, and then I'm going to sweep his leg, and then I'm going to stop on his on his kneecap, and then I'm going to flow over this way because now his buddy's coming, you know, from this direction. It was all very relaxing. But
for guys, that's relaxing. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I watch too many movies in which the guys, you know, if they have problems with each other, they beat it out of each other, and all of a sudden they hug. It's like, that was great, man. It's like, okie dokie.
Fight club match?
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess a form of exercise is just beating the crap out of each other. I guess.
No, when I was God, we've kind of really gone off topic here, but
I know.
You know,
I was kind of hoping Rusty would come call in.
Yeah, it's like Rusty, if you're listening, call in, please.
Usually she calls in so she can listen. She's probably running late at the studio or at her clinic, school, so. Who knows? Or having a difficult time trying to find her earpiece or something. Technical
right.
difficulties. But, yeah, I mean, the experience that I have with the, you know, medically fragile and terminally ill, I have this client at the office who have so many different medical maladies or symptoms that the medical community doesn't even know, you know, what's going on, and something to do with her pancreas, and then she'll have some other symptoms that's not related, but she's almost like her own doctor because she's researched everything, and she's, anyway, so on and so forth, and she tries to tell me all about it, and rather than having her relax throughout the the massage, I guess her way of relaxing is to talk about it. So I just let her talk. And it seemed to help because after about almost a year or maybe over a year of having her as a client, she actually came up and thanked me and hugged me that I was only one of a few people who really cared and listened. So I was like, oh, okay, well, you're welcome. And I've worked with people with rheumatoid arthritis. And they're in constant pain. I'm working right now with someone with ALS. And every time I work with them, it just kind of puts me in a state of trying to feel what he feels. And I don't know if I can actually, because I'm not in the situation until I am in the situation, then I'll know how I'll react or how I'll deal with it. But the fact that you're not able to take care of yourself because you can't move is kind of scary to me. It's like being imprisoned in your own body, and that's how I was told it felt like. You really have to have a trusting spouse or somebody that you trust to be able to help you out. I mean, even just to eat, you know?
Right.
To do the basic stuff. So, and the couple that, you know, that I'm working with, they're funny as heck. So they have a lot of fun. They tell jokes. They were even telling me that when, you know, he was still able to move, that he would go to a party in heels and a boa, you know, feather boa, and that's how he basically, you know, that's who he was before before the ALS kicked in. So I would ask him questions. So really, you did that? And then of course, the wife would say, "Yeah, you should check out his legs." And I'm going, "Oh, okay." So they have fun, they laugh. And it's just, you know, it's just great just knowing the two of them. So I feel like my life has been enriched with all the people I've worked with.
Absolutely. No, that's a good thing. You got me kind of thinking about, you know, the quote unquote energy and intent and the healing frequency of things. I mean, it's really weird because, you know, growing up, I was always the guy that people would come and talk to. I would be their sounding board. And it would be, you know, always kind of interesting because, you know, all I do was would listen and they would feel better about their situation. They may have not made, you know, better decisions about the situation that they had come into, but that listening factor is very important. It's very comforting. And it kind of comes down to, you know, what I kind of feel, you know, what's important in life is, you know, to be as happy as often as possible for, you know, as long as possible. And I think that, you know, sometimes just the simplest of nods or glances or even touch can can really improve someone's day. I was after class. There's a ramen shop in Bellevue. It's called, I believe it's Kukai or Kukai. It's a ramen shop.
Okay.
And I was actually having a pretty decent day, with class. And I had ordered my meal, and the waitress had gently patted me between the shoulder blades. I made some offhand comment, and she put her hand between my shoulder blades in a very tender, gentle manner, not in a flirtatious manner, but just, you know. And it was like, oh, that was really cool. You know, it kind of made my day a little bit better. So it,
I
find
think it's
very,
all about the intent. It's
yeah,
definitely
exactly.
All about the intent, yeah.
You know, and it was like, it was a situation where, you know, it's amazing just how a gentle glance or, you know, or a simple touching gesture can help. I mean, you know, one of the tenets I try to always live by, and I always have problems with, is, you know, be kind and be gentle. You know, it's very difficult as a man because you're taught to be tough. You know, you're taught to be raw. You know, I'm dominant. I am male. Raw, beat chest. You know, and if you're kind, and if you're gentle, you're looked upon as weak. So I don't know. I think, you know, in the grandiose scheme of things, those simple nods, those simple gestures, you know, do improve the quality of life.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, when you said kind and gentle, that doesn't necessarily mean what it means to other person. They might just take it to a point that, like me, I don't like light touch. Kind and gentle. The light touch actually irritates me. And there's some people, like the guy that I'm massaging right now who has ALS, wanted a massage, a real massage, because everybody's been afraid to hurt him.
Right.
Not that I'm hurting him, but, you know, he tells me if it's too much pressure, and I push him just enough. And he wants to feel alive.
Right.
And not be treated as he's dying. And
right.
So what I can go further with the kind and gentle is basically empathic and understanding. And also the fact that you're there is sometimes enough, because they do feel isolated. And if you understand exactly what they're asking you to provide them and you do it, and it's not because of fear, it's because of love or you know, kindness in your heart that this is what they want, and you do it, you know. So to me, that speaks volume. And a lot of the folks, even the elderly who comes in my office, likes to come to my office because I actually give them the kind of massage they've been looking for. Every time another massage therapist sees them, because they're in their 70s or 80s, they're like, oh, I gotta give you the light touch. And no, they like the Lin massage, and they've actually called it Lin massage.
The Lin massage?
Yeah. One of them does not want anybody else but me to massage him. So,
right.
Like, cool. So, and once in a while, I go a little over his pain threshold and go, oh, I'm sore there. Okay, thank you. And we'll just move on.
Well, it's very important to communicate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important to communicate, you know, where your limits are and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And such. It was, because there's some points in my body that, you know, the only way to, you know, get that muscle to let go is to be aggressive, is to have that deeper touch. And so I do appreciate, you know, in a massage therapy capacity, you know, a therapist who manages to, you know, read my body feedback, you know, and not to toot the horn of where I work, but I'll tell you what, Lynn and Aaron are really great massage therapists, and they're very, very empathic when it comes to listening to your bodies and stuff.
Okay, let me make a disclaimer, though. As empathic as we would like to be, there are some folks we cannot read. I've had situations or clients that come in, and I do everything. I'm going, okay, they're not reacting the way I think they should be reacting. And then they get up and go, that was a great massage. And I'm thinking, good, because I didn't think that was good. I just couldn't read them. And then
right. There's
just some people, they just tell me what's going on. And go, oh, I know what I need to do. And I do it. And then it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. And then this is all what I need to do. And that, how's that? Good. Okay, and let's try another one. And it actually, I feel alive when I can actually have a connection with a client, because I feel like I'm really helping them. I'm useful. And the folks I have no connection with, and they just say that felt great, and I don't see them again, it's like, we didn't. It's because we never had a connection. I couldn't read them at all. And not for them not coming back was just They were just being nice.
Yeah.
That's how I see it. So please, people, don't be nice. Be honest. Be honest. That's all I can ask for people is honesty. Because I can't
get... Don't be maliciously honest, though.
Learn. No, I can't learn, I can't become better or do something differently if I don't know.
Absolutely. Communication is key with any, you know, massage therapy. And I think in general, it's with any therapy, you should always communicate with your therapist, you know, whether it be physical or emotional or spiritual.
Oh, definitely. You know. If something's not working for you, let them know, because how are they going to help you if they don't know what's not working or what's
exactly
working? So they can continue what's working. So that's another thing is, and some people need to be honest first and foremost with themselves. Some go in the delusion that they're doing something correctly or whatever when, you know, it might not be good for their body.
So this is the part where we might go segue about, you know, honesty and self-image. It's kind of interesting because there are some people who I know, and I've even fallen into this trap before, where they've never had the talk with themselves because they've always been taught that they aren't a function, that they are not an integral function of their life. They are an integral function of someone else's life. So the entire brutally honest with themselves and with what they want, that's a new concept for some people. And it's something that I've kind of ran into a lot, especially in my early 20s, about, you know, well, you know, you're the firstborn son, you know, it's your duty, you know, it's expected of you to fulfill these certain standards and everything, you know, a man needs to be this way, gender, you know, all of the wrong gender roles from,
yeah,
you know, Spaniard colonialism were like shoved down my throat. So I really didn't honestly figure out what I wanted, and then interestingly enough, when I got sick, that's when the dialogue started. You know, when the cardiomyopathy hit, that's the dialogue that really started of like, well, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? You know, hi, you know, you're not invincible. Your warranty has, you know, I kind of jokingly said, yeah, my warranty finally ran out, so I need to, you know, update my warranty and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think self-honesty is something that we as a society need to cultivate. And it's hard because we have so many media messages telling us to be of service to something else that, you know, I think one of the prime examples is Abercrombie and Fitch. You know, they're facing a lot of controversy right now because, am I still there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry. You know, Abercrombie and Fitch, and it's kind of interesting because they're facing a lot of controversy right now because they don't want to, they only want to make clothing for thin people. They don't want to accommodate, you know, people who are of larger sizes and such. And this is sort of like done a lot of really bizarre things in media. One of the responses I saw on that was the fact that there was I don't want to call her a fat woman because, you know, she wasn't. She was definitely a husky woman, but she was not fat. But she was wearing Abercrombie and Fitch clothes, and I kind of like, when I saw her blog, or at least the photos of her in the Abercrombie and Fitch clothing, I found it very empowering for us, for our society as a whole, because now we're looking in, at least some people now will look inward and they'll figure out what they want and they'll be able to have that honest dialogue with themselves. Because for the longest time, I don't think people, consumer America doesn't enable that. You know, so you make a lot of really weird decisions when you don't know what you really want. And that's where my segue is.
There's actually a mixed thing with that one as far as the American culture. They are not honest with themselves because they're looking at the outside of themselves and what other people see them. And so they do everything they can to please other people. But to go back about the service, I disagree. Doing service for somebody else actually is helpful, especially if it makes you feel good. The problem with you equating service for others with Abercrombie and Fitch is they're not doing anybody a service. They're actually doing everybody a disservice because of the negativeness of the fact that they're putting forth the you're fat, you're ugly, and you're thin, you can wear my clothes because you're beautiful. So I want to make sure I make that distinction because what I do is a service for other people, and I feel good about it. And it makes me a happier person. It makes me feel alive. And I'm excited all the time when I'm actually helping others, at least in the realm of massage.
Right.
I can't do everything.
Right.
So
right.
I just want to make the distinction because when you said service for others, I go, where is he going with this?
Well, I mean, I believe there's a certain sense of I kind of want to put in there consensual service, I believe. You know, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you are doing this for a person because you want to do this for a person. You know what I'm saying?
To be careful with that. You really have to be careful with that because, well, the consensual probably is where, you know, the idea of the giving has to be accepted by the somebody who's receiving. There are people who feel that they are helping when it's not. Like, unfortunately, people praying for me. I ask them not to. It doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And yet they do it because it makes them feel better, but not me. And then they feel that when I don't thank them, that I'm being snobbish, when really
right.
That's not what I want. So don't force what you want to give me that I don't need.
Well, no, it was a situation where more I wanted to relate that, you know, coming back at, you know, service unto others, it should be a genuine desire to be of service and not obliged is where I was coming from.
Okay,
obligatory.
That makes sense. Thank you. Phew.
Yeah, that's where I was coming from is that, you know, to be of service to each other. I mean, it was kind of funny as I was referencing, you know, TED Talks. I was watching TED Talks and they were talking about achievable altruism, you know. You can give just enough to save life. Because I think this guy was coming from that all, you know, that, you know, if you can save a human life, especially a child's life, you know, you're actually helping yourself. And, you know, I think you said something like the difference between, you know, saving a child's life could simply be not buying bottled water because you could have given that money to that cost of that bottle of water would have cost like a mosquito net to help prevent children getting malaria and such. So, you know, it's this really weird dichotomy of service unto self and service unto others. But, you know, when you're offering the service unto others, you know, make sure that it's not a obligatory, you know, thing. You're doing it because you want to. And such. I think that's where I was coming from.
Okay. And that
but,
in
know,
itself,
the, you know,
it actually
you know,
helps
and
the person helping, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I think that was a lot of the reasons why, you know, growing up, I was sort of everybody's older brother, and it was really weird because, you know, people were talking about, you know, the relationships and everything, and I didn't want to deal with any of my problems. I think that's why I took on, you know, I wanted to help people with their own problems because I didn't want to deal with my own. And then later when I got sick, I was like, maybe I should change that.
Oh, it just kind of reminds me just the topic that we had. Way back, I think I was just a year out of school from massage. I think it was in 2000. Yeah, just practically a year because it was in June. I had to go back up to Alaska. My grandmother was dying. And the funny thing is, automatically the first thing that I did was grab her hand and just massaged her hand, just caressed her hand, letting her know that she's not alone. And I talked to her. And that's all I did was talk to her. And everybody was crying, especially my cousin, who was wailing. And unfortunately, my grandmother died on his birthday. And what I didn't like about his crying, what it was about him. Why on my birthday? And I wanted to slap him. But, you know, I didn't want the negativity, so I just focused on talking to my grandmother. And the thing is that she was hooked up to a the machines to keep her breathing, and also a heart monitor. And her heart would beat, and then it would stop. And then the wailing, the crying, oh, my goodness. Oh, I was crying, yes, but I wasn't sobbing and screaming like I was in pain. I was in pain, yes, but I wasn't loud. And I hated to lose my grandmother. And then the heart comes back on. So the nurses outside were hearing the ups and down and you know, the noise level, that they basically took the beeping sound off, turn it off. And finally, they took my aunt aside and talked to her and basically saying, nobody lives off of 70% oxygen. She is not going to make it. So they took her out of her respiration machine, and that was basically it. And she died peacefully. Everybody was crying. And so it was so natural for me to just talk to my grandmother as she was dying and just hold her hand. I wasn't creeped out by it. It was so natural for me. What creeped me out more was seeing her dead body during the wake, or, you know, when you look at them in the coffin. Right. I didn't even want to touch her then. She's not my grandmother. It's just a shell. My grandmother is no longer there. And everybody was basically, when I told them how I was present during her death, my cousin, one of them, other cousin, was going, I don't know if I can do that, Ate. That would have creeped me out. And I said, no, she needed me there. So that's basically the only experience I had with somebody dying, and it was my grandmother. And I was there to be part of that, to experience the loss. But I don't celebrate her death. And a lot of my family member put stuff on Facebook on the day that she died. She died on Father's Day in 2000. Same birth. So unfortunately, my uncle, the only son that they, you know, my grandmother's only son, would remember her, I guess, on Father's Day. I don't know if they celebrated her or not. And my cousin, whose birthday it was. And so they always post that stuff. And to me, they should celebrate life, her life, what she's accomplished. And I don't partake in the death celebration because I'm not celebrating her death. I lost her.
Right.
So,
I don't know. There's this really weird cultural thing about hanging on to death, you know.
I know. It's so weird and so, I mean, there's some folks like, you know, the goth scene and all that stuff, but they're putting a positive spin to it, of course, but there's some people who really are into the depressing stuff.
Yeah, it was really weird because, you know, I remember when my grandfather passed away, and I didn't want it to be a huge fanfare, you know, and I just wanted to say goodbye, you know. And, you know, one of the biggest things, it was really bizarre from my standpoint, and one of the big hang-ups I have about my writing was the fact that I had such a huge passion for writing when I was, you know, younger and stuff. Mm-hmm. And all the grandkids were supposed to write some sort of statement, you know, about it and everything. And my mom looked at me point blank and says, "You keep yours down to a paragraph." And so I did, you know. But other cousins, when they wrote their goodbye letters, I mean, they had pages and everything. And I kind of had this really bizarre, it gave me this really weird complex about my writing. It's something that I keep on working through even today, you know. But I was in the room when my grandfather died. It was kind of crazy, you know, as far as, I don't think being in the room when anybody dies is, you know, not crazy, but I don't know. It was weird because we were, you know, we did the Filipino American thing and, you know, we did the death watch, you know, as depressing as that sounds, but, you know, we just wanted to make sure that, you know, we were there. And grandma at the time when she was still alive and my grandfather was on his deathbed, my grandmother had Alzheimer's. So she kind of knew what was going on, but kind of didn't. So she came in on, you know, in a wheelchair, and then we wheeled grandma out. And then a couple of moments later, he passed. And it was kind of, you know, it was kind of weird, but I guess that's what grandpa was waiting for. And that was sort of the thing where he, you know, he let go. And it was weird because I didn't really go into, like, breakdown cry mode. The only thing that I knew was to run down several flights of stairs and get everybody who was in the cafeteria upstairs, you know, and say, "You guys need to be upstairs now," and everything. And it was
so basically you were still somewhat rational and not this irrational bawling, crying kind of thing, in which that's not going to help anybody.
Yeah, it was just really, you know, it was just very, I don't know. It was just bizarre. And then, of course, later I went into therapy over it, you know.
Oh, geez.
You know, there was like, you know, because consistently, you know, now that, you know, some of the family elders are getting up there in years, you know, we've had another one pass away. And, you know, it's really weird because now that whenever somebody dies in my family, I go into, like, crisis management mode. It's really messed up. You know, it's just like, I will deal with this in therapy 2 weeks after the funeral. Thank you. Can we move on?
Well, as my grandmother was dying, I was actually talking to her, and what I was trying to tell her was that it's okay to pass. You don't have to hold on. It's time for you to go. Just let go. And I kept telling her that her husband, my grandfather, we call her Lolo Baldo, is waiting for her. So, you know, and I guess even though at 70% oxygen, the brain is practically dead, but I was hoping, really hoping, that somewhere in there she heard me. And I was the last, this was my comfort, that I have to think, I was the last voice that she heard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good comfort to have, come to think about it.
Yeah, you know? and this is another reason why I like doing laundry. You have no idea why I like doing laundry. When I was a teenager, my grandmother, of all people, was telling me how to put the clothes from the washer properly in the dryer. What I was doing before is I was just basically pulling everything out of the washer and just dumping it in the in the dryer. So when it dried, it wasn't really dried because they're all ringed up and stuff like that. She told me that I had to individually take them and then open them up and then shove them in and then do that individually kind of thing. So that as they fluff, it'll dry evenly. Of all the people, it was my grandmother who told me how to do this. And so every time I do laundry, and guess what I do almost on a daily basis, being a massage therapist, is I do laundry, and that is always happy for me. So
no,
now you know
awesome.
The secret of why I like laundry. And plus, it also means we're busy in the office.
Well, yeah, that, and I think if I think you need to share that technique with Aaron.
Okay.
For when he does laundry, the sheets.
You guys, I'm gonna have to do something because, he's not gonna be as busy as I am while I'm gone. So but he still needs to keep up with it because if he doesn't, he's gonna have another clean sheets. That's not good. Not good at all. I'm kind of excited. Going to Alaska. Let's get out of the depressing mode.
Have my like cheer me up music queued up on Spotify. Let's see here. What do I got here? Let's see here. I've got some Kill Switch Engage, some Spine Shank, some Tesseract. Yeah, I'm good to go.
Okay, great, awesome. I may put on some dub music later on, dubstep, and just to get me in a faster beat kind of mood. Or I might just break out the guitar because that actually has helped me get out of bad funky type of emotion, stuff like that. But the fact that I'm actually going to Alaska and teaching some of the stuff that I know, and hopefully I'm able to remember words in my head, because when I'm stressed out, I tend to go, oh, what's the word I'm looking for? It rhymes with this or so with this letter. Oh, I hate that when that happens. It just looks stupid. Sounds stupid, too. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Just turn it in Tagalog. It'll all work out.
I hope so, because in Anchorage, Alaska, I'll be there for technically 6 weeks, but 1 week of that is driving up and driving down. Yes, I am driving the Alcan. It's going to take me about 3 days to get up, and I'm gathering about 4 days to get down, because I'll be pulling my my scooter, taking it back. So, I can ride it around. Yay! Save some money, gas money. Yay!
You might have like a month to like ride around in it, but you know.
Oh well, yeah. Hey, are you going to? You said something about putting together some cool music because there's no way I'll have cell coverage while I'm in Canada, because if I use my data stream, that's going to cost me hundreds of dollars. And most likely in the Yukon Territory, whatever I'm going to end up, because I have to have north, hit the middle of Alaska, and then start heading down, middle of the, how do you call it, the boundary from Alaska, Canada, and then head down to Anchorage. So, so far what I've done is I've uploaded or downloaded on my iPad some books on tape or books on DVD.
That's always a good thing.
And I have some music to keep me going if I don't want to listen to stories. But did you say something about a CD? I think.
Of my
some music?
Or...
You're going to set me up? You said you're going to set me up with music or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I can help you with music. You know. You like, I mean, depends on how many CDs you want, you know, and what kind of music you want. But, you know.
Oh yeah, because he's a DJ here.
Yeah, right. I'll make you some mixes.
Well, I want something that I don't have. Definitely, what is it that you kind of like? Because I want to hear some of that and see if it's like, oh, that sounds cool, and maybe it'll be new music for something.
I'll make you a couple of mixed CDs.
Cool. Because right now, what I have in my depending on my mood, I have Carpenters. some 80s music, of course. I have to.
80s rocks.
Keep me awake. Huh?
80s is great
rock?
Music.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And of course, some of the current music and the dubsteps and all that stuff. But because I had the new MacBook and whatever, I've used up my five, is it licensing for five different
devices?
So it didn't all go through. It's like, what? How do I reset that? Because I've lost my other MacBook and I've lost my iPhone. So it's like, guys, come on. You're only giving me five, and yet you want us to buy new equipment and new, you know.
Yeah, they want you to deauthorize the old equipment.
Well, how can I? It's I don't have the other one anymore.
Usually, you can. There's an option to deauthorize. Probably the best thing to do is to go up or go down to the Mac store and ask for a deauthorization.
Okay.
And they'll teach you how to deauthorize the old devices. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and today I almost got hit by a car.
Yeah. Speaking of death, you know, how did that shape your day?
Oh no! Actually, I wasn't even angry. I had a feeling about this car, and it was going very slowly. So I thought they were going slowly so that they can come to a full stop because they were approaching a crosswalk, which I just entered. So as they approached where it says stop, I thought they were going to stop. I was directly in front of them already. And it kept going. So I just jumped because it was like, whoa, you haven't stopped. And by that time when I jerked, that's when she saw me and stopped. And I just looked at her because the first thing I just said was, you know, to some people it's obscene, but it's the name of an imaginary person. And so I just jumped, said that, and I just started laughing. And I kept on walking. It's like, oh, wow, cool, I almost got hit. Oh, jeez. Yeah, I'm weird.
Yeah, you're weird, but, you know, it's a good thing.
I didn't even want to flip her off. It's like she must be having a bad day, so why make it worse?
You don't want to encourage her to actually try to hit you.
Exactly. I just laughed because I guess the laughing came about that I knew she wasn't going to stop, and yet I assumed she would eventually stop when to some gut feeling that I knew she wasn't going to stop, and yet, you know, I basically just told myself that my gut feeling doesn't work. No, it's like, no, my gut feeling always works, so unfortunately, I have to listen to it. Ugh, I don't know if that made sense.
A little bit. But either way, I'm glad you didn't get hit by a car.
Yeah, if I did, then I would have called people and say, hey, guys, I need to be picked up at the UW area.
Right?
Yeah. Who knew that going to
the
dentist
could
be bad for your health? What?
You know, the good news is at least there's a hospital near there. You know, you've got the U of W medical facility.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I go there because of my dental. I'm self-employed, don't have insurance, so I pay out of pocket and I can't afford what other dentists cost, so I become a volunteer for students. And no, folks, it's not free. Just because you're being worked on by a student doesn't mean it's free. It's actually, they still have to pay the teacher. They pay the facility. They have people who work there, like the receptionist and all that. Oh, those people, they have to have some revenue other than taking it from the students. So, no, it's not free. It's actually, the savings is almost up to about 40%. So that's one way to get your dental, even done by a student. And so far, I lucked out because the student that I have is learning some periodontics, and that's exactly what I needed because I'm going to get an implant of a tooth that they had to pull out. And I'm not going to go into that because it's really gross. But yeah, and she took pictures because she has to document her stuff, what she's been doing with her client. And I told her that, you know, if you have a way to give me some copies, I'd like to have some so I can also see what the heck you did. What was the change from before and after? So, yeah, it's going to be awesome. I'm excited because I finally get to chew on that side of the mouth eventually.
Yay!
I know. Oh. But I'm so glad I'm in a city, I guess, town, that is close to a university that has dental. Awesome. So that's my plug with the UW.
Yay!
Oh, and what is another plug? Renton Technical College. You need to give them a call, although it's May right now. Yeah, you definitely need to give them a call and find out when massage clinic is going to be held. And I do believe it's $30 or $35 for an hour massage done by a student. They're getting ready to graduate. And so before graduating, they're kind of having them work with the public so it's not so scary when they get out of school. So, yeah, if you guys are interested in receiving massages, especially if you've received massages before, definitely check with your local community college if they have a massage therapy program and find out when student clinic is happening and definitely get yourself in there. And what they really need is good feedback. And what I mean by good feedback is telling them how the pressure was, how it worked for you, how it didn't work for you, what would work better, and nothing to do with time, because time, they have no, it's going to be a minute is a minute. You can't say, oh, what would make your massage session better, more time. Time is something that they cannot change. Time will be always time. So something that they can change, their pressure, their technique, so on and so forth, those they can change. So anyway, that was my plug for Renton Tech, even though I'm no longer with them. Make it short.
You're doing them a service by giving them proper feedback and, you know, supporting them with their, in their aspirations.
Being a massage therapist, yeah.
Exactly. Because we need more healers in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, and going back to our conversation about being honest, do not be nice to these students. But I'm not telling you to be rude to these students. They want constructive criticism, honest, constructive criticism. Don't tell them they're pokey. Tell them why it felt pokey to you. Don't just accuse them. That was pokey. Because somebody did that on their feedback sheet, what was bad about the massage is pokey. Didn't exactly talk to the students why it was pokey, why it felt pokey. And so this guy's classmate started nicknaming him Pokemon. So that was funny. I thought it was funny. But, it didn't help the guy get better because pokey in what respect, you know?
Was it too much finger? Was it not enough finger? Was it too much palm? Too much people's elbow, you know?
Well, unfortunately, the public has little proper, how do you call it?
Nomenclature?
Adjective?
Vocabulary?
An explanation, exactly. But, you know, but don't just say pokey. Just say why it was pokey. It just felt pokey to me, and, you know, maybe if you use your more palm or anything like that, some even, not just all the time, or something to that effect, you're humanizing the experience and not just criticizing and then leaving. That's always
right.
Something that I really didn't like when I was a student is people tell me something like, oh, more time. It's like, well, then pay for more time. If that's what you want, pay for more time then. You know, I can't give you more time if you didn't pay for more time.
Right.
So, and I ask that with my clients as well. You know, it's not going to hurt my feelings if you end up liking Aaron's massages. That's great, you know. Not everybody likes, not everybody likes my massages. And I don't need to have everybody like my massages.
Right.
That's a lot of people.
It's all a matter of chemistry at that point, you know, whether or not your massage therapist works and such.
Yep,
so.
Yep. So we have less than 15 minutes left on our scheduled blog talk. Boy, did time go fast today. What is going on?
It always goes by fast when we have a guest.
We're both at home, in our respective homes, I mean.
Yeah. Time goes by fast when we have a guest. So, go figure.
So, this is a bi-weekly or every other Tuesday blog talk show. And what we have scheduled for next time is, I do believe, is in June 6th, I think. Hold on here. My slow internet is trying to pull up the episodes for the next time. And it's really thinking. And I'm just talking because it's still thinking. But I think it's the 6th, whatever the next other Tuesday is. I'll be in Alaska by then. And if I recall correctly, I set it up to be like manifestation.
Okay.
So we might even talk about, you know, anybody who watched The Secret. Or
exactly.
Anything to that effect.
Or what the bleep do we know?
Oh, that too. And Down the Rabbit Hole, which is another, I think it's the after What the Bleep, right?
Yeah.
Down the Rabbit Hole. I don't remember.
Exactly. I haven't seen that one yet, so. I haven't seen it yet, so.
So, yeah, I would probably put some links later on at Century Health Talk group, because I do believe they're on YouTube. So I'll go find them, post them, have people watch it, and then we'll discuss that sort of thing. The thing that I'm trying to stay away from is religion in the manifestation. I want more spirituality and, you know, that sort of thing, because I would like to invite people to talk about this the manifestation of good things. I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say here, but I just don't want it to be muddled with religion. I guess you kind of know what I'm talking about, because once it gets to that point, it becomes denominations, rituals. No,
yeah.
We're not talking about those. We're talking about what worked and what feels like work, but that doesn't necessarily mean it works for everybody. It can work
right.
For you, it can work for some, and something totally different, but it's still about manifestation. I can't seem to talk right now. It's basically thinking what you want, exactly how you want it to go, and then having it manifest itself. It feels magical.
I mean, not to give, you know, not to start the episode, you know, prematurely, but there's just something to be said about a very interesting connection between, you know, feeling, you know, genuinely feeling like you're going to achieve something and then it naturally happens.
Well,
and such. I mean, it was kind of weird because,
I have a different take on that, though. It's not feelings. It's a thought. like, say, for instance, I've been told this. Somebody had to think about flying. And we are able to fly because somebody thought of it. And they made it happen because they kept thinking about it. Somebody thought about faster transportation. It went from wagon wheels with horse and buggy, and now we have a bullet train. Unfortunately, we don't have it here in the North America. We need to. But there's bullet trains out there that's going 200 miles an hour. So, you know, that sort of thing. And we thought about the universe, and now we're seeing the universe with telescopes. So that's what I meant by manifestation is like the way I thought the type of clients I want to attract, which is, again, manifestation is the law of attraction. The type of folks I want to attract, proactive clients, happy clients, or somebody who can benefit from massage, and they know it. And I can benefit from them as a human being, the interaction. And so I've been lucky enough to attract those type of people. That's what I mean about manifestation. So that would be a great episode for us to talk about. And I'm really hoping we have more callers at that time. It's just very difficult for me to market this blog talk with my busy time before a trip. And I'll be just getting into Anchorage and getting myself situated on that particular, the next episode.
We put forth in the universe that we want to have callers for the manifestation episode. So I think if we keep on that line of thought, I think it'll happen.
I think it will happen too, because I'm going to be in Anchorage and I'm going to talk this thing up. Okay. I think that's what I'm going to do. Yeah, because I'm outside of my own natural normal life, so I will be seeing more people actually in that environment. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and definitely thank you again, Andy, for calling in and being my sidekick as always here. I seem to have lost Aaron as my sidekick.
Well, we can always see about getting him back.
Huh?
We can always see about getting him back.
Yeah, I think I've over utilized his his time. You know, he does have other things that he wants to do, so definitely. And plus, he's a youngin. He wants a social time with his friends. Yeah.
Well, that's important.
So, socializing is important. So anyway, thank you again, Andy, for a wonderful episode tonight, and hopefully.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh,
it's always a pleasure doing these things.
What's that?
It's always a pleasure doing these things, and I always learn something new.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Heck, me too. So, everybody, good night, and we'll see you in 2 weeks again, same time, same bat channel. Yeah, I guess that would be all. And, of course, it's going to take time for the music, I think. Is the music on?
I haven't heard the music yet. Let's hear.
I haven't either, but it's saying it's playing. So anyway,
it's unfortunately,
there you go. All right, everybody, good night.
Good night.